everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I am so excited today. Shireen Gourbani on the left. Of course, I'm in the center. But Shireen, we have Victoria Petra, the chair of the Salt Lake City Council, in studio with us.
Councilmember Pietro, thank you for being with us. So this is a little different, but on this show, on this program, listeners know that we have talked quite a bit about what's happening in Salt Lake City on a number of issues, ranging from homelessness to the Delta Center. So I'm hoping today we can touch on a number of those topics, but really the big issue is the recent vote on, I'm not even sure what we're calling it, but it is the vote on a district vision on arts, culture, entertainment, and sport convention, forgot that, to really look at reinvesting in the Delta Center downtown and to look at what can happen in activating the area around it. Our listeners are, this is Utah Public Radio, so they're all over the state, but we know that when people come to our city, this is an area that they often come to. So we want to know about you, who you are, a little bit about what the city council, Salt Lake City Council, is responsible for, and then we'd love to talk about this deal. So
And Shireen, I've been able to see Chair Petro in action.
Yeah.
You know, as chair, you do a really fabulous job. One of the fun things that you do is you sometimes stand during your facilitation. So you're used to a dais and everyone's sitting there behind a thing. Chair Petro standing up. So anyway, tell us more about you.
I'm sure. So, you know, I have to just compete with everyone. So I have been serving on the Salt Lake City Council since 2021. I won my election in November 21 and was appointed slightly early. My predecessor had left. And my very first vote was to vote against a place in my neighborhood becoming an emergency crisis shelter. I represent one of the only places in the state that you can create a majority-minority district. Our AMI is significantly lower than the rest of the city.
What are the rough boundaries of your area?
It goes roughly from 900 or 1,000 west, depending on where you are, out to the border, the county line, and then roughly North Temple up to the county line north.
Yeah,
so I'm the northwest quadrant. If you if you take off or come home to the airport, you're coming into my district. So,
I love this area.
And
this is a fascinating area.
This is a fascinating area. You mentioned AMI. What is that?
Area median income.
Yeah.
So we started out, the Rose of Rose Park was built as a place for blue-collar workers returning from war to raise their families and to build some equity through real estate investment. When white flight happened in the middle of the century, it became the home for new Americans who took that over. And so our story is this beautiful, literally the American dream. It's people who are looking for their opportunity to give the next generation better than what they had. During COVID, we had double and triple the COVID rates because we never were able to quarantine. We are the people who cleaned the hospitals, who stocked the grocery shelves, who ran the meatpacking plants. We are literally the backbone of not just Salt Lake City, but of Utah. We keep that airport running. We keep all of the manufacturing out there running. It is the coolest place in all of Utah to live.
Yeah, I love this area.
Yeah,
I played a lot of soccer in this neighborhood.
Nice.
And correct me, Victoria, if I've got this wrong, but Clayton Christensen, who's known as probably the top three business scholars of the century, is a Rose Park person. Do you know this?
I did not know that. I know Carlton.
This is Carlton's brother.
Okay, very good.
Is Carlton in your district?
He is.
And was born and raised at least in the district.
Yes.
So Clayton Christensen, the Innovator's Dilemma, he's a former, he's passed now, but a former Harvard business professor, but he's one of the most prominent business thinkers of our time from Rose Park, Salt Lake City.
Incredible. Yeah. I love Rose Park. I think it's a place that I first looked to buy when I was looking for my first home in this community. There are many things that are incredible about it, but I do think that it is an area where when we talk about just health equity, when we talk about disparities around environmental racism, when we talk about the impact of air quality, this is a community that is disproportionately impacted when we think about kind of our west side, really stretching from impacts from the Great Salt Lake to air quality, airport. All of these different things are more deeply impacting the residents of Rose Park. Tell us just a little bit more about you, because when Natalie tells me you stand, I would guess that has to do with something that we have in common as well, which is a background in the arts.
Absolutely. So I am originally from New York. I'm Italian and Latina. I am the cultivation of a lot of really brave people's dreams. They came here on boats and tolerated a lot of mistreatment. So I'm the first person in my family who got to go to college. My father sacrificed mightily. He was a DoD civilian with the Army. We were stationed in Germany and Italy growing up. So I had a front row seat to the Desert Storm crisis, the Bosnia-Herzegovinian crisis. So I grew up very cognizant of my role as a global citizen. And then I went to college actually for music. I am classically trained in piano, flute, voice, and guitar.
This is beautiful.
Did you know this?
Well, I knew the art, but I didn't know the detail.
Okay.
And then I have a master's in musicology. I thought I was going to be a music professor, but I graduated in 2009 and the world was, that's the last time the world was economically on fire. And Duke University literally refunded my PhD application fee and said their endowments were so hit they weren't taking. So I had recently gotten married and got pregnant 34 seconds after that. And so I had redirected my goals and that diverted me to, I chose to do a Master of International Studies. I was going to focus on exclusively nonprofit management. But while I was there, I found out I have a knack for public policy.
Yeah.
And so that kind of set the stage for me doing this weird amalgamation of things that I do now.
This is so, Shireen knows this, Victoria, but I work in public policy. That's my craft. I now tell people that performing arts degrees are great degrees for public policy. And it's because of Shireen.
Oh, you're so kind.
Well, Shireen is so, she's so communicative.
Yes.
She's very articulate. She's able to express herself. And, you know, we watch her in studio just do things that most of us can't do. And it's because of some of what you learned in being in plays and theater.
I think it's about telling, helping. I think that we are fundamentally storytelling creatures. And we make so much sense of the world through that. But I will also say, being educated in the arts, the way that you learn to watch other people, to really listen, to understand like how you're going to move things forward. And actually, I was thinking about this because we were kind of discussing our politics a little bit. And it's true that I'm quite on the left, quite progressive.
As you think?
As our listeners sometimes tell me. But I think that you can have what my arts education taught me is you can have core beliefs, but you have to figure out how you're going to work with other people to make things happen. And so you can have something that you hold dearly, but also understand that there's an end goal and that might not carry everything that you believe with it, but the product of moving forward and creating is more important. So I think that you can be quite, some listeners would say, you know, quite extreme maybe. And I think we've had certainly people on the right that are quite extreme, but when you are often able to find that common ground. To me, it is like being in a play or working on a piece of music together. You have to make compromises to make things work within a structure.
Yeah, they often will say it's like watching a dance.
Yes.
You know, we're in a dance.
Yeah.
Victoria. So the issue at hand as your chair of city council has been arguably the largest private sector move in the core of our urban centers, you know, in a long time. I mean, $3 billion of private capital being invested, the state legislature getting involved. Give us the thumbnail sketch of where this is at. And
the irony that as an arts kid, I'm disintegrated into sports is ridiculous. But, you know, this has been a labor, and I'm not sure it's always a labor of love. It's a labor of intensity. Mm-hmm. For me, you know, I come from a family where their favorite sport is whatever season it is. The men in my family are always watching a sport. So the value of it as a social shaper, my family came here from all these different places and the New York Yankees gave them the buy-in to America. Mm-hmm. And it's now come down to me as a proud tradition. So I know, like, as a social shaper, I'm proud of them. But I do think we're at an inflection point in history. And I do think that increasingly these sports franchises have become, they've pushed themselves to a place where they're no longer independent as you can't just sell tickets and merch and pay for your team anymore. You now require public investment. Mm-hmm. And right, wrong, or indifferent, that's the opportunity I was presented with at the moment in time I was presented with. We can debate if that's right or wrong, and I've got feelings.
You blink and the opportunity's gone.
But this is an opportunity. Yeah. And so my only question was, can I take this moment and this opportunity and use this catalyst for something good? We know that catalysts can either burn down a lab or they can forge steel. And so my question at all times was, is this forging steel for our city? Is this making us stronger? Is it making us better? we know that it doesn't come without sacrifice. And so at every moment, it's putting it on the scale and going, does the benefit outweigh the sacrifice that we're asking? And it's tedious and difficult. And if I'm being honest, it's terrifying. But I refuse to operate from a place of fear. I will always allow data, insight, good faith knowledge to outrun that.
Shireen, what I love watching this is this happens in a lot of public discussions, but you start in one place and you end in another. And it's through that public discussion and those pressures, the forging of the steel, that you get to a better place.
Yeah.
And for a whole variety of reasons, I think this has gotten to a really good place. This visitor charge add-on on the tickets that provides funding for affordable housing and workforce development and Japantown, that's critical. And you did it, Victoria.
So there are a couple notes I just want to add to this. So I feel like we've said this, but to be clear, what we are talking about specifically was this sort of notion that the Jazz would leave downtown Salt Lake City. And if the Jazz left, what would that do to a huge district, right? A big arena that we have down there. What would be the impact also if we were simultaneously finding out that this group was also recruiting an NHL team? So the NHL team is here. Now that is happening, right? So what is it? We're calling it the Utah Hockey Club or whatever for the first year.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that. But the idea was that, and I'll say my personal tension was in looking at other deals that have happened for stadiums or for sports teams in multiple cities, the ultimate benefit that is sold to a city is often quite different than the outcome that happens. Now, Natalie has been kind in trying to bring me along on this argument about why we should give billionaires more money. But I think the thing that's different about this, and I would like you to tell me about why you think Salt Lake isn't going to fall into this trap. And I would love to hear it from you too, Natalie, because I know you've thought deeply about this. But this is not about an investment really in the Delta Center. It is. There's I think it's $500 million that's going to go of the $900 million, so almost $1 billion, $525 million of the city's money will go into renovations of the Delta Center. That is a huge chunk of money. There's an additional $375 million that will go into the investment area, but outside of the arena. As a person who lives near this, who lives near downtown, this is an area that needs investment for many, many, many reasons. But to think about that relationship inside and outside, the inside is the place where I get a little like, ooh,
yeah, this will be fun.
But the area outside, that predetermined investment outside, I think makes this different. But I'm also skeptical.
So Shireen,
with it.
Let's hold this thought, take a short break, and then we're going to go right to it.
Okay.
We'll give you just a second to think about it. So Natalie Gochner with Victoria Petro and with Shireen Gourbani. Stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. This is Shireen Gourbani.
And I'm Victoria Petro.
Natalie Gochner. And this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Victoria. Okay, so Shireen has set up a question to just say, it frustrates me that, you know, we help billionaires and all this public money go into an arena. Round this out. Tell us a little bit more about the investment.
So the first thing I want to do is the giving money to billionaires concept is a little dated and jaded for me. I'm now looking at this as an artistic commission. We are giving a lot of money to someone who has access to a lot of money and can leverage that public capital to accomplish things that we would not have been able to do at this point without this level of attention, investment, momentum. And so for me, the wrong that is that convention center plaza over there is
big walls, not very walkable,
dark,
takes
at
away
night,
unsafe parts of our city,
not functioning. If you've been in the convention center, you know it's not in top shape right now. So for me, I would not have prioritized this above a homelessness response. There are other priorities I had. However, again, I am not here to dictate what opportunities come to me. I'm here to leverage them to best outcomes. So I now have a commission to this organization to, while they are accomplishing their goals, which is creating a stadium or an arena, sorry, stadiums are outside, arenas are indoors, arena that can accommodate this new team and enrich our historic team, to also correct the lack of walkability over there, the lack of sustainability sustainability in the building materials and how we're leveraging that. The lack of economic spin-off, because we're not collecting property tax. We're not collecting any economic activity taxes over there like sales tax. So for me, the opportunity became, yes, I need to invest with you to accomplish your goals, but you're going to be that catalyst and you're now a commissioned artist to shape what comes next. And for me, my personal drum that I always beat, the proudest thing I will do is be part of a restorative society. I know that we can't afford to be reparative, but we are a restorative community with what we're doing with Japantown.
Shireen, it strikes me that what Victoria's painted there is she's answering the question by saying we're not subsidizing anyone. Mm-hmm. We're investing.
Yeah,
we're investing because we benefit as a community.
Right. So we taxpayers, Salt Lake City and people who come and use this area are going to be giving $1 billion. The group is bringing $3 billion to the table. So it's not a total one-sided deal. I want to be really clear about that. But I also do think that there is this question of like, what is the appropriate role of taxpayer money? And when you mention things like homelessness response, investment in education, investment in food structures mm-hmm. in our community, those are things that I do feel passionately about. I don't feel passionately about sports,
yeah.
but I do love, and I can tell you that I have really deep, I don't think I've fully lodged my deep complaint about what it was like to experience the NBA All-Star Weekend here
yes.
in a district, this district, that was dead.
Yep.
And it's dead largely because of the built environment,
yeah.
not because people weren't trying.
Correct.
Shireen, there's a fundamental economic principle that I don't think has been well articulated. I'm going to try really quickly to do that. I've seen the city council hearings where people say Nobel Prize economists say they don't pay for themselves. You know, this is they don't get the benefit that they advertise. Here's the principle. When you look at the state and you invest in downtown, that doesn't make the state's economy bigger. It doesn't. It redistributes it. That's the point. You're taking money from the suburbs and you're bringing it to the core.
Yes.
That's what pays off for the city. And that's what pays off for homelessness and for crime and for affordable housing, because the worst thing you can have is a tax base that you know, dissipates and a hollow core.
Right.
What you need is to bring wealth back into the core.
I agree.
And but so that's these studies that say, oh, it doesn't pay for itself. At the state level, it's just a redistribution of the entertainment dollar.
Yeah.
But to Salt Lake City, to the core, it pays bounties.
Yes.
And we want it to pay bounties because we don't want an empty core.
I agree. Well, so this is interesting because I spent a lot of time downtown and I was just downtown last night grabbing a drink and having dinner at a bar. And the owner said, wow, it feels like the city's kind of given up on Main Street. And I thought this was interesting in light of the conversations that we're having about this development. And to be clear, I believe that the construction on the Delta Center is scheduled to be completed by 2027. And then the whole project would be like 2033, which is a convenient time.
Of course, right? Olympics 2034.
But what is the idea of tying all of these pieces of downtown together to making sure that we're not experiencing what a lot of people saw happen at the Gateway, for example, which was when the mall downtown opened, City Creek opened, it became a ghost town. What's the idea to keep all of this moving?
Yeah, so it's not that we've forgotten about Main Street. It's that this place has had a fever, and so we've had to give our attention to over here. We still have the active studies for Main Street that look at, do we turn it into a pedestrian mall? We still have infrastructure under there that dates back to 1897, so we have to tear it up, and we're going to make that count when we replace that infrastructure. I think for us, you know, that concept of all boats rising on a tide, the only thing we have to do is make sure we don't draw lines artificially around the tide and dam it into one specific area. And I think with this participation agreement, we've done a good job with that. I think, I've met with the Grand America people. I mean, I'm worried for them, too. They used to be the hub, and now we've got a bunch of high-ends coming in over mm-hmm. here. So, you know, I think it's staying at the table, having a lot of conversations. I come from the West Side, so I am used to this whole, like, I feel forgotten concept. But we need people to remember that they are integral and that we are doing the best we can. And so you vocalizing when you need something is the best thing you can do.
And this is why your work's never done
yeah.
in city building.
Yeah.
Shireen, I want to ask Victoria about a couple other things. Are you okay if we
yes,
transition
let's
there?
Do it.
I learned that you are a national Democratic delegate.
I am.
We're in a presidential election year. Tell me more. Is Biden going to survive this? This will air July 25th. I think he'll be gone by then.
I apparently just want to do history-making, precedent-setting things this year. So the first time I go to the Democratic National Convention will be the year that the presumptive nominee, it appears, is not going to be the nominee.
Are you for opening it up, or you want to give this to Kamala Harris?
I want my fellow Democrats to tell me what they want, because I am a delegate as opposed to a council person where I go and I use my best judgment to encounter whatever. I am a representative directly, so I need to know. I would go hard for Kamala Harris, but I also would go hard for Gretchen Whitmer.
She's my fave.
I like a Gretchen Whitmer, Cory Booker ticket.
Cory Booker is the politician. He might be just the man in general of my dreams. I love people who understand that we have to exercise the top-down policy power to assist people, but also remember to shovel their neighbors' driveways and be community builders and do that grassroots up. So anything that returns us to that.
What a year.
Yeah.
So is it Chicago?
It's Chicago.
So you'll head to Chicago.
I will.
Who else from Utah goes?
Mayor Jenny Wilson is part of it. Councilmember Alejandro Puy and Eva Lopez Chavez, all the Latinos, we're going.
Nice. You're going to have a great time.
It's going to be memorable.
Yeah.
I'm either witnessing the last season of democracy or I'm starting to write the new chapter of it.
Yeah. Okay. Another issue.
Okay.
Unless you want to stay on Biden. You're good.
I think I expressed my concerns.
Okay. 2034 Olympic and Paralympic Winter Games. You're going over to Paris. Who from the city is representing Paris? I'm assuming Mayor Mendenhall will be there.
Mayor Mendenhall, I have given myself a restriction on especially international travel this year as we are doing all of this. So the mayor is going to represent us well over there. But we get to have the party with everyone.
Tell our listeners about this party.
So at about 2:30 a.m. our time, we are going to be broadcasting the Salt Lake City presentation to the IOC. Between 3:35 and 4:10 a.m. our time, they will make the announcement. At 5 a.m., we'll have a drone show to celebrate. And at 5:30, the mayor will be joining us by simulcast. And while you're there, there's going to be food trucks and all at Washington Square. I'm bringing other side donuts. There's bobsleds. And it
doesn't get any bigger than this.
Yes.
This will be one of the biggest parties in state history.
I feel like you are a person who values your sleep. Are you going to be down there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I won't miss it.
Yeah.
I'm excited about this. And, you know, the thing that I'm most excited about is that it changes everything in terms of your planning and your thinking. All of our thinking about the future gets reset into a 10-year concept. And so our streets get better. We work on our air. We work on our Great Salt Lake levels. We work on, you know,
housing and homelessness.
We work on restaurant service, the quality of our hotels.
Yeah.
Just what we share with the world. And there's an ethos. I wonder if this has come to you, Victoria, but the first Olympics was all about kind of like putting ourselves on the map and showing we could do it. This one, I'm hearing an ethos emerge that we're going to serve the world.
Yes.
We're going to show the world how you love, how you unify.
Well, okay.
No,
here we go.
No,
I'm
seriously.
Excited.
No, this is serious because we can give back. And that's pretty powerful.
In between now and then, we have 450 guaranteed days of legislation where we're going to have to practice loving and policy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If that's to become a reality.
Yeah.
And so from my heart, what would happen is we would stop with the culture wars in the state and we would focus on managing this growth and leveraging it to the most prosperity, health, and stability for every Utahn possible.
There's going to be a push for this.
Yes. Well, and I just want to echo that because what we hear when average Utahns are asked about their top concerns, it is affordability, managing the growth, concerns about air, water, healthcare access, cost of healthcare, cost of living. So those issues, I hope, are the ones that we are absolutely fighting each other over.
Transit and infrastructure.
That we're caring so intensely about, and that hopefully we can find a future in this state where we are not targeting trans kids or significant minorities of our population to advance a culture war.
This is where my Democrat really comes out. It's on these social issues.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So can you tell, I know, and we're just kind of coming up on the end here, but as we are just on the other side of celebrating Pioneer Day, do you have any reflections for us?
Speaking of unity, I'm a big fan of this state's pioneer heritage. And, you know, whether you're of the predominant faith or not, there are people that gave their lives to help settle this beautiful valley. And I'm opposed to the kind of juxtaposition of Pioneer Days and Pine Beer Days, because I think it's divisive. That's my angle.
Yeah.
And I like to let, you know, let go of anything that sort of, you know, separates us and use it as a time to say, Utah's a pretty darn incredible place and let's unify. Why don't both of you give your quick thoughts? We've got just a minute and a half.
I mean, people will not be surprised to know this if they know much about me. I love a parade.
And
I love
a half minute.
I love a community event. So I hope that people find ways to engage in and find community.
Yeah. Victoria, we'll give you the last word.
I acknowledge that I'm the beneficiary of people who came here and built what I have inherited. And I'm going to continue the pioneer spirit by trying to innovate ways to do things better, to protect more people and offer the American dream to more people.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Well, happy Pioneer Day, everyone. Victoria, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Both Sides of the Aisle. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.